Words have their moment, their day in the sun. You know how the world of business throws up trendy phrases that hang around for a while, only to be replaced by the latest new buzzword of the moment? Collaborative working, usurped by blue sky thinking, replaced by leverage, until the next piece of low-hanging fruit requires a deep dive. Language, a colourful, movable feast. It happens in the church too. Theological buzzwords rise to the surface, then die away. Ecumenical, replaced by hub ministries, nudged aside by measurable spiritual outcomes, until the next new thing comes along. It's how it is. As it happens, the word of the moment is missional. Missional. The question is asked, are we being a missional church? Are we evidencing the five marks of mission? Or are we failing in our calling as the church and instead looking forward, looking inward? And instead of looking forward, looking inward, enjoying what we like with little thought, effort or outreaching to the countless people who've no idea why we're here and what our message might be. We looked some months ago over a 5-week period at the five marks of a missional church, the kind of church that was not living in the past or content to be living off the efforts and commitment of the past, or comfortable and complacent about the present, or not much concerned about the future. Are we a reminder of what the five marks of mission are? To proclaim the good news, to baptise and nurture new believers, to respond to human need by loving service, to transform unjust structures of society, to challenge violence of every kind and pursue peace and reconciliation. And number five, to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation and sustain and renew the life of the earth. No small talk there. That's a big canvas, a pretty exhaustive and potentially exhausting set of targets, goals, aims, objectives and visions to keep us all awake at night, keep us all busy, always busy. Certainly as far as those who are driving the church, who are making the crucial decisions about where resources should be focused, increasingly scarce resources of personnel should be placed for the maximum strategic effect, those with the purse strings and the power to move the pieces, they want to know who is and who isn't being missional. They seem to take the view, if a church is not doing mission, then it's not doing church. I do think we always kind of knew that. Knew that as a fire is meant for burning, so the church was meant for mission. But perhaps the view of mission was narrower, more specific, and the clue was in the name. The missionaries who travelled the world in response to the Great Commission in Matthew's Gospel, when Christ directs his followers to go into all the world and make disciples. That was what drove, inspired and resourced mission. They were all there, the National Mission Committee, the World Mission Committee, Seaside Missions, the Edinburgh Medical Missionary Society, Mission to Seafarers. Every presbytery had a mission committee, and the emphasis was on making disciples, reaching out, evangelism, sharing the good news, going out and bringing people in. Not just in order to reseed the church, but because we had an amazing story to tell, wonderfully good news to announce. This was why we did everything we did. Taught the children, had youth groups, held Bible study groups, invited Billy Graham to come and preach at the National Stadium, did parish visitations. We knew what mission was. No one needed to tell us. This was our raison d'etre. We understood that. So that when I joined the Presbytery of International Charges and found there was indeed a mission committee, I kind of thought I knew what they would be about, what their remit would be. Imagine my surprise then when I discovered that mission was being interpreted or understood across a much wider range of possibilities and responsibilities. It was about providing horse riding opportunities for disabled children in Spain, retiling a psychiatric ward in Sri Lanka, planting olive trees in Palestine. And not so much, if at all, about that narrower emphasis, the making disciples bit. The scope of mission had been broadened to incorporate a whole range of concerns, from the environment to justice and peace, to hands-on, sleeves rolled up, getting stuck in to the problems and pressures of people on the ground, who were there to be helped. For no ulterior motive, no hidden agenda, they needed help. The church would help them. Mission. Simple. None of this in contradiction to the making disciples, the more complementing that emphasis. Making sure that we didn't just talk about the love of Jesus, we show it. We are willing to pay the price it inevitably brings. The earliest missionaries realised pretty early on that if there was a disconnect between what you said and what you did, there would be a legitimacy and an integrity issue there. There would be hypocrisy writ large. So medical care, education, economic initiatives became very quickly part of how you did mission. Practical care as well as spiritual initiatives. Schools, hospitals, agricultural schemes. Those schools and hospitals are still there. In a world that seems to take great delight in rewriting history, some of those missionary endeavours to which men and women dedicated their lives and for which they made sacrifices we can hardly imagine, some of that work that has been so embedded in the culture and gratitude of millions of people across the world has been reassessed, reinterpreted and reviewed, seen through the jaundiced lens of perceived colonialism and imperialism, cultural appropriation, the disturbing unhappy history of the imposition of Western values where they had no right to be, and a disrespect for indigenous cultures. Well, some of that may have happened. There will have been insensitive people saying and doing insensitive things. Mistakes were made. Well-intentioned mistakes. However, all I know is that millions of people, Christians, who owe their understanding of the faith to the legacy of those missionary efforts long years ago, are grateful that someone came and told them the story, shared the faith, made disciples. And now we are grateful for the energy, strength and joy in the faith that characterises those places and peoples, whose turn it is now to energise and inspire slumbering and anxious Western Christianity and share with us their passion, their trust in God and their vision for his kingdom. The circle has revolved, and what the West is losing, the peoples of the world are finding and sharing. Those who were once the teachers are now learning from those who were once the pupils. In South America, South Korea, India, Africa, where churches are thriving and growing, they have much to teach us and we have much to learn. This is why we so value our connections in Malawi and Nepal and long to keep those connections strong and safe. Because the vibrant faith of Africa, the patient loyal trust of the Nepalese church, a minority church in the middle of a tough situation, the joy our fellow Christians find in their Lord is their gift to us, their blessing upon our head. And if, like the early church we read about, when the disciples decided they would each send as much as they could to help their fellow believers who lived in Judea, they did this and sent the money to the church elders by Saul and Barnabas. If, like the early church, we can be supportive in practical ways, supportive of projects, initiatives and programs carried out in the name of the church by men and women of faith and imagination, then this can be part of our ministry, broaden our horizons, remind us what it means and sometimes what it costs to be a missional church.